Good afternoon. Can you hear me at the back there? In the, are they the stalls? What are they? I don't know. They're non-muddy seats. We're going to start very shortly. All that remains for me to say is that if there are any problems relating to the venue, that the venue manager is standing over there, so do go and see him. I can't quite imagine what those problems would be, but you know, you may have a better imagination than me. My piece of paper has just vanished already. That piece of paper is what you might be hopefully within sight of. It's extracts of a book called The Bible, and I shall be referring to it at various points in this seminar. I don't think it's particularly standard Greenbelt protocol, but I'm going to pray at the start. Father God, thank you very much for the unity we have in Christ Jesus. Thank you for joy. Thank you for laughter. Please help us to understand it better for your glory. Amen. Great. Well, who am I? My name is James Carey. I'm a scriptwriter, a comedy scriptwriter. I write a show on Radio 4. It's the thing I'm proud of is a show called Think the Unthinkable, which you've now missed. It's finished. We did three series of it. I think that's the end. Tuesdays at 6:30 on Radio 4. It was. And there was a sketch show on the Wednesday called Concrete Cow, which I script edited. I've also written four episodes of My Hero for BBC One, which, if you're an adult and you don't like it, kids love it, and it gets more viewers than The Office. And I also wrote one episode of My Family as well, which some critics do actually like, and millions more do like that. And they kindly let me write one episode, and I didn't break it. I have no great expertise in the theology of comedy. I feel like something of an amateur. I am a comedian, therefore I am a script writer. I also happen to have a degree in theology from the University of Durham. These two things haven't really met at any point. I have not really read any lengthy theological books about comedy. I have read an essay written by a friend of mine who was training to be a vicar at Oak Hill Bible College, and I have to say I found it very dull. And the problem with books on things like laughter and comedy is that they don't seem to have any joy in them whatsoever. And often books that are mainly about theology don't seem to, you know, apply to the fact that we watch TV, we enjoy it, we make jokes. How does that all fit together? So I've just thought about this for a while. I've probably got about a 4-hour head start on you thinking about it. This session lasts for just less than an hour, so I'm confident I might get away with it. I'll talk for as long as I've got notes for, and then when I run out, we'll open it up, and it may turn out you have much better wisdom on this than me, but we'll take it from there. Firstly, I wanted to ask the question, is a theology of comedy necessary? Does it matter what we laugh at? Or why we laugh. I mean, Christians should be joyful, and Christians should be full of joy, and we want to kick against sort of po-faced churchiness. And that's, you know, that's quite a strong temptation. Well, I think, yes, we do need a theology of comedy. Comedy is a part of language and communication, and is an immensely powerful part of language. When people are trying to be comic, they're trying to invoke in you a physical reaction. There's probably only one other supposed art form that actually tries to get a physical reaction out of you, to try and work out what that is. It seeks to move you, mainly to make you laugh, something that seeks to move you so strongly that if we're Christians, it must be viewed by God in a certain way. And as Christians, we really should be interested in God's opinion about comedy and laughter. Secondly, comedy is relational. Very few things are funny in isolation. It is not just the way you tell them, but it's all in context, mainly in the context of relationship. So we feel we have a comic connection with our nation's comic icons like Basil Fawlty, Captain Mannering, David Brent, Alan Partridge, Steptoe, Alf Garnett. We relate to them, and they relate to us and the people on the screen. Who they are makes us react because we are relational beings created that way. So someone slipping on a banana skin isn't very funny. But someone we've learned to love, slipping on a banana skin discarded by him earlier when he was quite angry about something else, and he's on his way to a date to meet the woman of his dreams, slipping on a banana skin, is funnier. I'm telling you. The viewer has formed a relationship of sorts with the person on the screen. We are relational. God is relational with us and in himself. So something so intrinsically relational needs to be looked at from a Christian perspective and related back to God. Thirdly, comedy is revelatory. What we laugh at says a lot about ourselves. We laugh at things we find funny. We frequently can't help it. A laugh can say, I'm pleased that man has been hurt, or what a clever use of words, or I agree that man is an idiot, or I'm having a lovely time, or I'm just laughing because everyone else is. A laugh can say, and then they're laughing because other people laugh. The ripple effect. A laugh can say a whole range of things about us and what we laugh at. So it's, you know, we need to look at it. Fourthly, comedy is important. As a nation, we think we have a better sense of humour than anyone else in the world. I've only said that we think that. I didn't say whether I agree with that, or whether it's just an immensely arrogant position, although I happen to think it is true. within loving relationships, we want laughs. You know, the good sense of humour abbreviation is very important. Is he or she funny? You know, because that'll make us more interested. So with something so important and basic as comedy and laughter, I think Christians are guilty of being rather lazy at working out what is appropriate comedy and what isn't. And I'm as guilty of this as anyone, because I've been making a living as a comedy writer for 5 years and I've never really thought about it. So one of the reasons I took on this seminar was it would force myself to think these issues through. And also because my job is so public, what I do is evaluated by people who I go to church with. You know, I really do need to have thought it through in advance. The angels have come to take me away. This false teaching you are hearing. Because my job is so public, therefore, I need to have worked it out. And it's pretty, if you do meet a comedy writer or somebody who's an actor or somebody who does stuff in public, do be kind to them. Because if you're a doctor, they don't know if you're rubbish at your job. And you could be a butcher, for all they know. You could be an awful doctor, and they'll never know. But you, so people feel that, you know, they know how well you're doing, as whether they laugh at it or not. So, you know, that's a personal thing. Just go easy, okay? So all I've done really is to think about this subject. I've looked in the Bible to see where people laugh. I don't think the word comedy is actually used at any point, but laughter crops up every now and then. So if we're going to take godliness seriously, we need to look at the Bible on that. What have I got written here? Yes. I read an article recently just saying, did Jesus laugh? And it just sort of says, well, probably. Even though at no point, you know, Jesus is portrayed as laughing. And so I find a lot of the sort of the literature on this doesn't actually have much biblical integrity. I'm not going to really rock the boat on that because I don't think I've got huge amounts, but I've got bits of the Bible here, so let's have a look. But we'll do that in a second, because also it may be possible to, you know, is the theology of comedy desirable, but is it possible? Yes, I believe it is. I believe in the sufficiency of Scripture. All Scripture is God-breathed, useful for teaching, correcting, and training in righteousness. That's an abbreviated version. All we need to know is in the Bible, and the Spirit will make it clear. But there are a few problems. The problem one is the Bible doesn't use the word comedy, as I've said, so I've gone for laughter. Comedy makes you laugh. Something that doesn't make me laugh, I don't count as comic. It may be dramatic, it might just be rubbish. Problem two, comedy is tricky because of the cultural, geographical, social, and temporal variations. So like those adverts for that bank, they clearly don't work because I can't remember which one it is. The A-OK sign is fine in everywhere except for in one country where it's meant to be very rude. It's interesting what comedy is big in certain places and what isn't. Norman Wisdom is a national hero in Albania. I haven't made that up. That is true. You probably know that already. a friend of mine, a comedian called Milton Jones, did some stuff in Sri Lanka, and some people came up to him and said, "Mind your language!" And he said, "What? Mind your language! Very funny!" A sitcom called Mind Your Language from the 70s, which I would say is a deeply racist show, is shown in Sri Lanka and is very popular. You can't account for that. Benny Hill, once he stopped being popular in this country, was popular all over the world. And I read his biography recently, and a lady who had worked with Benny Hill was recognised by a largely untouched Amazonian tribe as having been in the Benny Hill show. So in different times, different things are funny as well. In this country, 15 years ago, jokes about priests and choir boys were funny, but they're not funny anymore. In the 60s, Peter Cook made his name doing Harold Macmillan. He impersonated the Prime Minister. It was shocking and hilarious. So it's a very difficult thing we've got here in terms of the differences between what people laugh at and what they don't. And we can all think of other examples. So on this sheet is the biblical references that I could find that relate to laughter. And I'd like to look at the main section. It's at Genesis 18, 11 to 15. Genesis 18, 11 to 15, which is the second one down. I'm actually going to read it from here, from verse 10, from the Bible itself. So Genesis 18, verse 10. And this is the bit where God is repeating his promise to Abraham that they will have a son. Abraham and Sarah will have a son, despite the fact that they're both extremely, extremely old. I think Sarah is 99. Verse 10, then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, "After I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I am old?' Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I did not laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh." I find verse 15 very funny. I don't know why. I just love the, "I didn't laugh." "Yes, he did." And that's it. Moves on. I don't really know what to make of that particularly. But this passage says just a couple of things to me. One of which is that Sarah's laughter revealed what she thought about God. God had made a promise that he would bless Abraham with many descendants. There was no sign of this happening because Sarah was in her 90s. So Abraham had a son called Ishmael with a servant girl, Hagar, which led to various complications because they doubted God's promise. Then God repeats his promise and Sarah laughs. 18 verse 12, her words don't betray her directly because she says, "Will I now have this pleasure?" But her laugh gives her away. And God knows what she meant by the laugh. Sarah thinks God can't do it. Sarah thinks God can't do it. It's too hard, so she's laughing. So laughter here appears to have something to do with power. God's promised something, and Sarah laughs. It's almost like Sarah is putting herself over God and saying, "I don't think you can do that." It's the same sort of laugh you get in Matthew 9, verse 24. I don't know if that's on the sheet. 9, verse 24, where Jesus says, "Go away, this girl is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. And there are parallel passages in Mark and Luke. And that laugh, it sort of says, "Nice try, I don't believe you." And this is an attitude that the Bible warns against, warns about a great deal, especially with reference to fools and mockers. Lots of stuff in about fools and mockers in Proverbs, and it's all bad, really. Mockers are making themselves to be superior to the person they are mocking, either by building themselves up or putting others down. Fools have no sense of perspective. Usually, they put themselves first and don't listen to godly wisdom. Godly wisdom in Proverbs being a fear of the Lord. They usually put themselves first. And in a way, this is what sin is at its most basic level, isn't it? It's putting yourself at the centre of the universe and ignoring God. It's the old three-letter word with I in the middle. That's what sin is. But God will not be laughed at. and the godly should not seek to put others down or laugh at them in a way which exerts power. And they should especially not laugh at God. So we need to be very careful about this. Do we glory in comedy that simply puts others down, that just makes them look foolish? In our speech, in our banter, what do we find funny? It's especially obvious when you laugh at individuals. The current target for jokes is George W. Bush, and he is deemed to be an acceptable target for jokes. Now, most jokes about him aren't actually satirical. They're not making a political point. They're just abusive and saying that he's a moron. And to say that, you're basically saying that you're better than him. And I think we just need to be a bit careful about that. And this is where comedy, sin and satire all collide. And to be honest, I've got no great solutions on this one. Maybe this is the talk next year, is satire and how that all works. But I guess we have different thresholds of what we find offensive. And the Bible sort of teaches pretty strongly that we should really bear in mind those who take easier offence than us, in the Romans passage at the end of Romans, with the strong and the weak. We should be really careful and not just say, well, if you've got a problem with it, if you find it offensive, well, that's your problem. That is not a Christian attitude. That is not an attitude that the Apostle Paul recognises. So we just need to be a bit careful. You see, take David Blunkett. Jokes about his policies may be one thing. I mean, in many ways, he does seem to be ludicrously fascist in his policies, which is extraordinary, bearing in mind his Trotsky origins and socialist background. And that appears to be massive hypocrisy. However, jokes about him being blind are probably a bit offside. There's not a lot he can do about that. And in many ways, we can be tempted just to say that we're better than him in some way or another. Also, jokes about John Prescott being fat, which he isn't, by the way. A friend of mine works with him. He has very big shoulders and he's got jowls. But if you look at him, he isn't actually a fat man. So every time people do jokes about John Prescott, so you can just turn smugly to your neighbour and say, he's not actually that fat. They won't laugh at you. They'll just think you're an idiot. But it will, you know, it'll give you a sense of satisfaction of speaking the truth in power in some Greenbelt type way. Never really worked out how that works. So, you know, driving a Jaguar so his wife didn't ruin her hair, you know, I could probably see that that might be a thing to do if you have a wife and she's worried about her hair. Who wouldn't do that if they had the opportunity? Anyway, that's not the point. We've got to be careful about using comedy as power. You see, Jesus told it like it was. He told parables. He was very satirical about Pharisees. But the thing that I'm concerned about, again, that I don't really have a great line on, is that just because Jesus did it, it doesn't mean that we can do it. Jesus died on a cross so that we don't do that. And he gets to say things and do things because he's God and we're not. So I think we have to be careful in how we apply what Jesus does to our own art of comedy, be it professional, amateur, conversational, whatever. So Jesus being God, he has nothing to prove, and so he has every right to mock. And if comedy is about power, who is more powerful than Jesus? And so therefore the person with the most right to laugh as a demonstration of power is God. So if you look back at the sheet on Psalm 2, the one enthroned in heaven laughs, the Lord scoffs at them. Psalm 37, 13, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. 59 verse 8, but you, O Lord, laugh at them. You scoff at all those nations. God can laugh because he's the most powerful. And therefore, if we're going to laugh, if we're exercising power, we need to be very careful. Okay, it's not a very funny point, but I think it's quite a good one. So is only God allowed to laugh? Well, no, there's plenty of room for comedy outside that, but we need to make sure that we don't use it to exert our power over others. Now, there's one sub-point here. It's a cultural observation about Britishness. We tend to use comedy to humiliate ourselves. We tend to like self-effacing comedy. We think it's very important to be able to laugh at yourself. This is especially noticed by my friend Milton Jones, the stand-up comedian, who recently went to Montreal. And you notice that all the American comedians go on, and they're very chiseled and good-looking, and they're very smart, and they're clever, and they're funny, and they notice things, and they say, hey, have you thought about this and thought about that? Aren't I clever? Aren't I smart? Haven't I noticed something that you haven't? Hey, why do they do that? Aren't they stupid? Whereas British comedians tend to go and just go, I'm an idiot! I'm so stupid! I can't remember my own name. You know, it's that kind of self-effacing, I'm so rubbish, I did this. I'm so rubbish that I can't wear the same coloured socks. You know, I'm not a stand-up comedian, as you're beginning to notice. But there's a way in which the British comedians kind of pull themselves to pieces on stage, and the Americans kind of don't really know what to do because they like winners. You know, they like winners over there, and we like losers. We find losers funny. That's why all of our comic icons are downtrodden losers, like Partridge or Captain Mannering or Steptoe or whoever you can think of. They're almost all people whose expectations exceed their ability, and therefore they can never get to where they want to be, and we love it. See, the danger then for Brits is that we carry this attitude over into our theology. So anyone who sort of pumped themselves up, we snigger at. So there's a tendency to mock Christian leaders, and I think that's fine. I think that's normally okay. They need to see the funny side. We're all human. And I think over the water in America, that's not quite so much the case. But we mustn't let this attitude carry over into mocking God and Jesus. Because only God really has... You know, don't laugh at God. It's really not a very bright thing to do. He's so much more powerful than us. And he can just kill you if he wants. I mean, Ananias effectively cheated on his tax form, from what I can say, or his gift aid form. And he was struck down dead there and then. It's not a bright thing to do. And as Brits, we're so non-conformist. I mean, despite, you know, our empire roots or whatever, we just like to mock authority. And it's an attitude that's very alien to many other cultures. So I think we need to be careful about that. It's also the Umberto Eco thing, The Name of the Rose. I've only seen the film, so I'm not going to claim any knowledge on that one. So what is acceptable? It sounds like we've got a bit of a downer on comedy and what we can laugh at. And that brings me to my second point, which is the final point, and also probably shorter than the first. So we're doing all right. The second point is this. God does the funnies in this section, Genesis 18, 11 to 15. What is the name of the child they have? Isaac. What does the name Isaac mean? He laughs. So after basically has said, hey, don't laugh at me. And Sarah said, I didn't, in that weird exchange. And he says, yes, you did. She has a baby and God calls him, he laughs. Isn't that extraordinary? A name given by God beforehand, possibly in response in 17:17, just above, to Abraham laughing at this original promise. It almost seems as if God is having the last laugh here. And I rather enjoy that. And so in a way, there's a sense in which laughter has been sanctioned by God. Now, it would be wrong to say that just because Isaac means he laughs, that that's a divine sanction to laugh, because Jacob's name means he deceives. But other scripture shows that there is a time to laugh and there is a place for laughter. Ecclesiastes 2:2, which is on the second column on that sheet. Is that 2:2? No, 3:4. A time to weep and a time to laugh. There is a time to laugh. Psalm 126, verse 2. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. See, here laughter is associated with joy. Laughter is associated with joy. And it's something that comes out of a happiness of being in the Lord's presence. See, if you look at Proverbs 14:13, which is on the sheet. Proverbs 14:13. Even in laughter the heart may ache, and joy may end in grief. You've got those two couplets there, laughter and joy, and they're put next to each other as meaning kind of a similar thing. Ecclesiastes, the time to weep and a time to laugh. Sort of laughter is the opposite of mourning and weeping. Luke 6, 25, on the second sheet, or on the back, sorry. What does it say there? Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh, for you will mourn and weep. So it's contrasting laughter and mourning and weeping. James 4, verse 9, grieve, mourn and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. So contrasting those saying, you know, be less happy within context, that's making a different point. The point I'm making is that I'm equating a laughter with joy, that the Bible talks more about joy than laughter, but they're equated. And also that it's sort of the opposite of mourning and weeping. So if we're Christians, we should want to laugh. We should seek joy. We should go where joy can be found. Now, we know that joy comes about as a fruit of the Holy Spirit. And there's a sense in which dwelling with God and God dwelling with us in his Holy Spirit brings about joy. And maybe that's why, I don't know, maybe that's why people laughed in the Toronto blessing. A reaction was just for laughter. I find the whole thing completely weird, and I have no wisdom on the Toronto blessing at all. But the only thing I can think of is that, you know, a laughter that comes from the presence of God with us, the joy that sort of spills over into laughter. Therefore, the comedy that we should be seeking as Christians is the kind of laughter that can happen in God's presence rather than God's absence. And that's quite a contrast to where we might naturally go for comedy. See, comedy is often negative, abusive, and dark, especially stand-up comedy. And if you don't believe me, go to Jonglers on a Friday night. Okay, it's a dark place, and the comedians I know who work there find it very, very hard because it's a dark, abusive place, and it's showing how cleverer you are than people. It's really tough. And given that we want to enjoy godly laughter, that may be the kind of place that we don't want to go to, because we're just going to get a toilet just thrown at us constantly. We'll get stuff that isn't laughter that comes from the Lord. And also, Ephesians, it's not on the sheet, Ephesians 5:4, no obscenity, foolish talk or coarse joking, which are out of place. These are very high standards here I'm setting. And as I was doing this, I was thinking, I'm shortly going to be unemployed. But the rule I have for writing comedy is this. Would I be happy for this to be happening in God's presence? If Jesus returned now while my show was on, would I be pleased to see him? You see, think about the last time you laughed a lot or went to a comedy club or watched TV or film. Think to yourself, would Jesus be laughing? Maybe, maybe not. The Simpsons, maybe. South Park, maybe not. Eddie Izzard, Ross Noble, maybe. Bill Hicks, maybe not. You see, because we're sinners, we kick against rebellion and we don't want to be told what we should and shouldn't laugh at. But there's no reason why we should be less serious about that than how we use our money, how we make lifestyle choices, how we choose to live in other areas. Now, being an arts festival, there are many people here who would say they're artistic in some way, and I would say that in some way, I guess, I'm artistic. You know, I'm a writer, I suppose, that makes me an artist. We want to be edgy, and the tone of the festival is very much freedom-bound. There's this element of liberty and freedom. But the Bible encourages you not to go there quite often. Avoiding adultery is not going near the person's house in Proverbs. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. You see, maybe we're rather loose in the comedy that we want to write, that we want to do, that we want to listen to, that we want to laugh at. So, I've got to the end, really. And all I'm saying is, to conclude, that we've got to be careful about how we use comedy. If we're using it as a power thing to build ourselves up over someone else or laugh at God, that's a warning. We need to be careful. Probably shouldn't do it. There's plenty we can laugh at. And if we want to be joyful, Christians should be joyful. We should be hoping to laugh. We should want to laugh. But that laughter needs to be almost within God's presence. So if we find ourselves thinking, ah, this isn't great, I shouldn't be laughing at this, then maybe we should reevaluate it. So having said all that, there's plenty in the Bible which I find hilarious. I find Job very funny. I find the because comedy is just, well, tragedy is just comedy without jokes. So if you do your own jokes, then it comes quite funny. But after Job has suffered immeasurably for a very long time, the way God responds to him from the cloud saying, a very lengthy sort of 3 or 4 chapter version of, oh yeah, you're brilliant. Yeah, humans are really good. You're great. Can you make it rain? No, I don't think so. You can't, can you? I'm God! I quite like that. I find that quite funny. I find Jonah very funny. He is the least... He is, I mean, in terms of motivation, he is the least motivated prophet of all time. He is a deeply racist man because he wants the Ninevites to be squashed. And he even goes to the mountainside to eat popcorn to watch it happen. And then he discovers that he is actually the most successful prophet of all time. When the entire city and animals repent with sackcloth, including the animals. I find that very funny. And just that last thing about... just a bit, it was in church the other day, and I couldn't believe I'd read it, but I'd heard it before, but I just thought, I can't believe he's written that. When Paul is talking about the circumcision group and those who want circumcision, he just says, why don't they just go the whole way and emasculate themselves? That's basically really quite funny. And I was reading it just thinking, steady on, Paul, let me know what you're talking about. But there is plenty... plenty of room for comedy. So in a sense, what I've done is I've just said, that's bad, that's bad. But there's plenty out there. There's plenty to laugh at. And we know when we've watched something that it's just been the most joyful, wonderful thing. I've mentioned Milton a couple of times. He's a stand-up comedian. He's done the festival before. We'll try and get him back next year. He's in the Edinburgh Festival at the moment. You watch him and you just think, thank the Lord for this man. He is funny. And he tells jokes that you can just laugh at and enjoy. Last year we had Tim Vine on. And he's just a funny man. He's just lovely to have on stage. And in a sense, you know, we desire satire and edginess and unpleasantness. And I just think as Christians, we should be seeking the joy that comes from being within God's presence. And in a sense, that's the only theology that I can find. So I've said enough. Let's have a few questions. Roving mic. If I've said anything that you find very difficult, unpleasant, offensive, if I've said anything that offends you, I'm sorry, but I stand by it. No, that's not what I said earlier, is it? So if you're in the grandstand, the mini grandstand, the mic won't reach you, so you'll need to come forward. But there's one question down there, that gentleman with a purple wristband. Does that mean you're a Jedi, or are you very important? I've got light blue. He's the dark side. Ah.
A lot of the biblical references were to mockers and scoffers.
Yes.
So is that when we're laughing at people rather than laughing with them? And how does that affect sitcom comedy? Are we laughing at somebody, or does it not matter if Thermo Man's not real, we can laugh at him? Is that okay?
Good point. Thank you. There's what I haven't addressed, because that's going to be probably another talk, because we've probably got enough for now to be going on with. Is the use of dramatic devices such as actors, characters, in order to do jokes. And there's a sense in which, in the way in which, I don't understand how that relates exactly to Jesus telling parables, but he does do that. And the way Jesus tells stories and parables, and the way the Bible uses stories and parables, it portrays actions that wouldn't be condoned or recommended, but that have necessary dramatic consequences. I think within the grounds of comedy, that is acceptable. And so jokes, people putting people down on screen, is fine. If, however, the intention of the joke is to make someone at home feel lousy because they're a certain colour, look, religion, something else, I think that's something different. I don't know what the theological difference is. I sense we know when we're watching, when something is being done to shock us or abuse us, and when it's just been played for laughs. But somebody else might want to come back on that after this next question. Is that a start? It's a start. Great.
I was interested in what you're saying about George Bush and political comedy. What about the Book of Daniel, and it's kind of taking a mick out of the Babylonians, and its use of satraps and all the musicians and
very
12
funny.
Foot highs and the fire 4 times hotter than ever before. And I mean, it's a comic book taking a mick out of a occupying power in order to gain some sense of power for itself.
Yep, That's good. I mean, actually, that you've just picked up one bit there that I did think about the other day, and I just thought how funny. Just the lengthy list that go on. Yeah, there you go. There's Daniel. The lengthy list that goes on again and again and again, and they just don't stop repeating it. And I think it just gets funnier and funnier, because you can imagine, where have we got it? There's a bit here. Astrologers and all these. Oh, here we go. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and set it up in the plain. Then he summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And then it says, as soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image. Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples fell down, blah, blah, blah. O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down. And furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned these guys. Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down, la, la, la. And then it goes on. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, royal advisors crowded round them. And just goes on and again like that. And the bit I love about it especially is I'm imagining the size of the group of these people who are sort of following the king around. And every time he goes off and does something, they're all like, ooh, and they're sort of in a large sort of cartoon-like comedy group going after him. And so I think that's absolutely right. That's a great point, that the Bible does satirise. I mean, the way that Jesus satirises the Pharisees as well. And so I think satire in that sense is good. Do you have experience of writing satire, Paul Powell? Coming up, there's a chap down here called Paul Powell. And he has a CV longer than your arm of writing jokes and bits and bobs for more political stuff. Tell, what have you done?
Okay. Well, first of all, that was really good. damn it. I used to write for Spitting Image many years ago, and now I'm doing The Son Of, which is 2D TV, which appears on ITV, as well as The Now Show on Radio 4. So I'm quite used to... Oh, there's some fans in.
Oh, a lot of fans in.
A lot of fans in. I write the bad bits. So I'm used to writing satire, and I really believe in satire. And actually, one thing I disagree with on James, I think, is the fact that I really like to have a point to comedy. Much as I agree with the joy of comedy, I like to have something that makes me think and something I can take away with. So that's why I like satire. I like making a point on behalf of the powerless. I like to criticise those who are proud and arrogant, although admitting that I have that myself. It's a very difficult thing as a Christian to draw a line between personal insult and what you consider as a relevant criticism. It's not easy, and I've made mistakes many a time, and I continue to do so. But I think it's very important as Christians that we do comment on society and criticise society and don't be afraid to offend people, perhaps, for the right reasons.
The right reasons.
For the right reasons, to make them think again.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess in the sense in which the way Paul says... I wish they'd go the whole way and emasculate themselves, does actually show the fire there for criticism and public criticism. You know, you brood of vipers in the Gospels and stuff as well. They're not afraid to... Yeah, so I think maybe I may have overstated the loveliness of comedy. But I just wonder that sometimes it can very easily just go into abuse. So if you don't like the Tories, that's one thing. But... just making repeated jokes about Anne Widdecombe for a 5-year period is actually just extremely unpleasant. And so we just need to be careful. But Paul writes lovely comedy, which is also dangerous simultaneously. That's very hard. Great, thank you for that. I might get you back in a minute if I start to flounder again. That'll teach you to come to my seminar. Another question.
Yeah, this goes right on from what you were just saying. I was just wondering if there are instances, circumstances where individuals or institutions need to be mocked, really, and in what ways we do that appropriately, and if there are ways to do that appropriately, and is that still a power thing?
Yeah.
Or is that mocking individuals and institutions because they're acting in self-serving, ungodly ways?
Yeah. That's helpful, thank you. I guess, I mean, just thinking of a church satirist, I mean, of church institutions, being someone like Erasmus, who did some extremely satirical stuff about the Pope being locked out of heaven in a book called Julius Exclusus, which I think was the beginning of the 16th century. Even though in the end he didn't actually go with the reformers, he made some very damaging points, because at that point I don't think anyone would argue that the papacy was really extremely secular, and the Pope had several illegitimate children despite being celibate. I don't quite know how he did that. So I think there is grounds for denouncing, and therefore I guess I need to be careful how I use the Romans 14 strong and the weak argument. I think within a church context that probably needs to be especially applied. So as Christians, we want to be building each other up, and also the way in which we mock people, or the way in which we satirise people, probably at first should be done gently, because there are, if we're going to rebuke or correct people, I think there's quite a lot of references to the fact that this should be done gently and quietly first, and therefore, in a way, using legitimate means to make our points, I think is probably a biblical way of going about it. Obviously, there comes a point where these are all going to be ignored, and you turn into Chris Morris and you do Brass Eye. And I think, in a way, that was probably the most controversial program of the last 5 or 10 years. Am I fair in saying that? Channel 4 normally get anywhere between... Well, there's a thing called the duty log. The BBC have a duty log, so that when somebody is disgusted by what they see, which is usually, you know, somebody... I read a radio show the other day, and in it somebody had a Kalashnikov rifle, and somebody phoned to complain that it was unfair to advertise Kalashnikov rifles. The BBC duty log is in itself a hilarious publication. I sometimes go into the BBC especially just to see what people are complaining about. You know, you do get loads of wonderful complaints. Every day the Today programme has 10 people complaining that it's too pro-Israel, and 10 complaints arguing it's too pro-Palestinian. I mean, people just... So there's a line where people phone and say, "Hello, I'd like to speak to the BBC, please. Yes, it's about something I saw. I'm furious." And they'll put you through to a very calm lady with counselling skills who'll basically write down what you said. Although sometimes what they do is they paraphrase it, because some of the things that are told to them, I would imagine... I mean, you can imagine what the original statement of behind this one would be. Man phoned to complain that ethnic minorities were possibly overrepresented. That means somebody phoned in complaining there are too many black people on television. I mean, it's as simple as that. They sometimes just sort of take the heat out of it. Anyway, most programs get none. Some get 2 or 3. Channel 4 have a similar line. Theirs get 4 or 5. Brass Eye got 4,000. I mean, it went off the scale, and the new scale they did, it went off that. It really was... I'm thinking particularly the one... the special about paedophiles. And I watched half of it, and I had to turn it off. Not because I thought what he was doing was wrong necessarily. I started to feel quite sick. I thought the overall point he made, which was the thoughtless condemning of people who are clearly mentally unwell and need psychiatric help, as well as sometimes being, obviously, doing one of the most things that society says is one of the most profound evils. I think that, you know, the News of the World outing of paedophiles deserved satirising. And I think Chris Morris, who unfortunately is not a Christian, I think that's the sort of thing that maybe Christians should be inventively doing more of, is saying... I mean, it's almost satirical compassion, I felt, that programme was. It wasn't defending paedophiles, and I would never do that. But what it said was, the way in which we have this debate is unacceptable. And the way in which celebrities attach themselves to big causes just so that they're often seen to be nicer people is also very questionable. If I'd written it, I wouldn't have done it that way. It wouldn't have been as good. It also wouldn't have been as offensive. I don't know. I guess we all know, I guess we know where the line is, and the line is different. But there has to be, as Paul says, a point. The stuff that I write is just sitcom. It's nothing, really. It just literally, people forget it immediately. And they say, I like the bit where he fell over. Oh, was that your episode? And that was a different episode. Oh, yeah, I don't think I saw it. That's usually where my comedy comments go. And I'm happy with that because it's just jokes. You know, there's nothing. It's just an Irish man who's a superhero for some reason, not understanding how things work on the earth, and it's kind of Mork and Mindy. So, you know, it's nothing to it. But, yeah, I think Christians maybe should be more outrageous in what they say, but we know the difference between abuse and satire, and I think we can be disingenuous in the way in which we dress one up as the other. There's a man with a question, lady with a question,
a woman with a question. Yeah, hi, thanks, that was great, really interesting. First of all, I was really interested in what you said about that we're very lazy at working out what's appropriate, and I do stand up at home, and I'm interested in that because in terms of plundering the unhappiness of your own family situation, because I do a lot of stuff about myself, and I'm kind of struggling with a couple of jokes that I don't really know if I should be doing or not at the moment. So I just wonder if you have any more pointers on how you work out, because you were saying the thing about would I be happy for Jesus to hear this, and personally I probably would be, but then somebody else might think no way, you know. So and like the thing you said about maybe not Bill Hicks, but I think Jesus would have laughed at some of his stuff but not all of it, you know, because I think some of it's brilliant. But so I'd just be interested if you have any more ways of working that out.
I'm afraid I don't. I guess I've written I guess also your view changes as you get older, and I'm sure mine will change as I get older. I mean, I'm 28, I don't know anything. So I feel a total fraud standing up in front of you lot, but thank you for treating me like an adult. But I mean, there are things that I wrote 5 years ago that I probably would rather not have done. And I think, in a sense, am I allowed to say you can just pray about it? Am I at the wrong festival for that? Is that a Spring Harvest answer? I think going away and praying about it is a good thing to do. I think expecting God to tell you, I think, tends not to happen. I mean, I think this is probably not even a spring bar. I think it's all in here. So I think if you can do it with a clear conscience, and if some people are upset by it, within a church context, you probably want to be careful of that, because I think we do have a special duty not to upset other Christians over issues over which we have no problem. Maybe that underneath it, there's an attitude in that Romans 14, 15. I am right on that. Those chapters, aren't I? I'm not going to get massively critted on. Oh, it's chapter 13, you idiot. I think just not lording our freedom over others because we don't have a problem with it. And I think we should just bear in mind that some do. So maybe if you sense it's going to be maybe in Jonglers, you are a breath of fresh air and you will be light in that place. And to be honest, anything you do will be a massive improvement on the constant. Sort of, but I think maybe in an old lady's home, I'm not saying those are the sort of gigs you do, but but I mean John Archer, who was on site till yesterday, I mean, he does gigs all over the place, and he does change it what he says a bit. He doesn't tend to hold back too much, but yeah, I think. Horses for courses. I think Jesus said that. He didn't say that. No. Ignore that. I think I need to repent of that joke. And I will do later. Question here. We'll do one more question after this. Great.
I suppose one of my major realizations over the last couple of years has been God having a laugh. And it's been a thing which is quite affected me spiritually, in the sense of actually imagining God there laughing. And particularly as in our heads we tend to have images of Jesus wandering around grumping or shouting at people, and occasionally looking happy, but mostly never laughing. And that has profoundly affected the way that I've looked at my spiritual development. Goodness, I'm standing very green belt here, aren't I? But particularly, for example, things which have happened to me. I've ended up seeing things as actually God having a laugh because, you know, I thought I knew what was going on. Actually, Richard, you didn't. You were all wrong. But it's kind of quite funny anyway.
Yeah.
And as part of that, I've also ended up having my view of God repeatedly knocked around, which is, I think, extremely important, because God is far bigger than our conception of God. And I think also jokes about God can be incredibly useful for actually shattering our views of God and pointing out the fact that our views of God are very much, you know, God stands up in clouds, shaking finger, yeah. going, no.
Yeah.
And actually, he's I mean, the one which always gets me, you're talking about South Park. Jesus on South Park, I think, is brilliant because he's got a cable TV program, yeah. Which nobody watches, obviously. And at one point he calls upon his super friends, which include Buddha, Muhammad, and Seaman, for no apparently good reason. That I think, is incredibly funny for sending up your view of multiculturalism and also your view of this small Jesus, but at the same time pointing out the fact that Jesus could actually be on a TV cable show, yeah. and you probably wouldn't notice, because you expect to see him sitting there as a big preacher at the front, attracting the crowds.
Yeah.
I don't know, I am constantly surprised and delighted and made to laugh by God.
Okay. That's great, thank you. I think what you said is very helpful. The jury's out for me on South Park. I mean, as a show, I think I watched the first half hour of the film and found that quite funny. I didn't watch the rest of it because I had to do something else. But I think I would be. I nearly put on the sheet a line drawing that someone has done. It's a picture of Jesus laughing, and I think it's. I don't know. I'm going to be with Jesus in heaven for a very long time. And I just don't want him to keep bringing up the times that I made so many jokes about him that I just think there are enough other things. I think you're right, though. There are times when you just know that God is just, you know, he is laughing at something very foolish that you've done because you weren't listening or you thought this was so important and it wasn't. But I think you're right. I think the laughing Jesus picture is useful, though, in a way. It may just made me realise, I think you're right, we can pick our perception of Jesus out of TV and films as well. And because at the risk of having public denunciation of films, people who make these films tend not to have Jesus mucking around. And therefore, I mean, for many people, Jesus is Robert Powell, who doesn't smile an awful lot. Or there's the Passion of the Christ film, which I haven't yet seen. And but then something that my tradition, I mean, I'm clearly from a evangelical background, we're not very good at remembering that Jesus laughed. Jesus was just really great to be with. Yeah. And people who are great to be with tend to be funny. And recently our vicar described Jesus as it's the loveliest man that's ever been. And you just think, I mean, he told it like it was, but he was just great to be with. So I guess, you know, he must have laughed. He knew all the good jokes, being God with complete knowledge. No point telling him a joke because he knows the answer. Have you heard the one about... Right. I can see how that would be dull for the apostles, the disciples, after a while. That's very helpful comments. Thank you. I think we've got time for just one quick one.
As comment, really, as born again Christians, we've got the Spirit of God. Therefore, we got the creativity of God. And I just want to encourage everyone, basically, if you're involved in comedy, you want to be involved in comedy or whatever, or you want to, you know, learn about that. You've got the Spirit of God. You can be creative. And the hallmark of Christians should be creativity. If we've got businesses, we should be the more successful because we can be creative because we've got the Spirit of God, as long as we've got integrity and everything else. And I got a friend of mine who's going to Bible college. He's a very, very funny friend. And I hope Bible college makes him funnier again. It's not designed for that, obviously.
Yeah.
But he is funny and he doesn't have to be deprecating, you know, towards himself or other people. He can pick on something, you know, pull a joke out of it and... Mm. He says, I'm funny too. I don't know where he finds that. But the fact is, he is. And, you know, it's great to have people like that because they're an example of, you know, for Christianity, you know, a positive thing. Someone once said, to share good news, you've got to be good news.
Yeah.
And I think that's laughter too, and, you know, and joyful as well and stuff like that.
That's very helpful, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Christians, we don't often look pretty miserable half the time. And so I think, you know, maybe we should try to have a laugh more. But I think what you're saying about, you know, having the Spirit of God, I mean, I sometimes get depressed just thinking, I'm not happy doing jokes about all of these different things. Oh, what am I going to do? And forgetting that, you know, I can pray. And you know, God gave me the skills to do my job, just as he made, you know, people skilled to be doctors and teachers and, you know, everything else. And he'll help me. And if you want to do it, he'll help you. And if you just want to, you know, improve your conversation skills and jokes, pray about it. Try it. I don't know if it'll work or not. But yeah, we can sometimes feel powerless because we can't make jokes about things. But we do need to remember, it's a very helpful comment, that that God can help us to do that. I think it's time to finish. Thank you for being lovely. Do please...